Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. So nice to have you here with us on this July the 2nd on the West Coast, now July 3rd on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We got a bit of a late start this evening, programming running over the normal schedule, and we're ironing out some slight technical snafus. If there is unclear sound, we apologize. Things are running like they normally do. Sometimes we get interfered with a little bit. In fact, that's what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about ways that we can interfere with the Matrix and create a whole new reality here in the United States to start off. I'm not going to go into any news this evening. I want to make the best of the time that we have with tonight's guest. He is an attorney. He is an expert in civil rights and also antitrust law. That means going up against the big guys that want to crush the little guys. And that's anywhere in business. We talk about that issue quite a bit on Evident Footprints, and with that, I would like to invite tonight's guest for his first appearance. It won't be his only one, I can guarantee you that, Mr. Carl Pierzon. Carl, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Hi, Don. Thank you very much, and the pronunciation differs, and my son and I have different pronunciations, but I call it Pierzon.
Pierzon, okay. I've heard person, Pearson, Pearson.
Okay. It's so many different ways, and I have given up trying to correct people, but I just thought that maybe to start off we could just use it that way. But judges are confused. I go in there and they say Mr. Pearson, and then the clerk will say, no, it's Pearson, and oh, I thought it was Pearson, but Your Honor, I don't care. Let's just get on with the case.
Okay, so it's Pearson then. Okay. How about if I call you Carl, just to avoid that issue?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've got so much in common. We've got so many things to get done. It's the interesting thing is that in spite of all the difficulties that are out there, there really seems to be a way by which we can do something.
Yes. Now, the reason I brought you on the show tonight, Carl, I have been gearing this show, which is, you know, Evident Footprints is really talking about my research and a lot of these issues in history and current events that are cloaked in secrecy or propaganda. And so my mission when I started out a little over a year ago was to expose many of these things and show the truth. Now, in the process of showing the truth, we have to speak about difficult topics, and I got to a point where I got tired of listening to the problems and wanted to start coming up with some solutions, which is the very reason why you're here tonight. You're a man loaded with solutions, and I'd like to give you the opportunity to share those with the listening audience.
Absolutely. I would like to, and I enjoy it. You know, last September 11th, a year ago, and a year before that, I was a guest speaker in the Cooper Union in New York City, where Abraham Lincoln spoke. And I was the only one that had any solutions. Amazingly, we had 20, 30 speakers there, but everyone talks about the problem. We know what the problem is, but what about solving it? So I'm the only person there that had any solutions. I just can't believe it, that people dwell upon the problem and they don't try to focus upon what can be done or if they do, it's always, well, if we pass a constitutional amendment, sure, of course, yeah. And if Congress realizes its responsibilities and makes changes in law, sure. But we don't need changes in law. We actually have enough law out there right now to do the job. And that's what I focus on. I think of things that can be done without the need for changing law, because trying to get change of law is what deters everyone. Everyone waits until somebody else creates the condition where then everyone will step forward and enjoy the benefits of an improved democracy. But in the meanwhile, we're slipping and slipping fast. It's Rome burning right now, as far as I can see.
Mm-hmm. Now, you and I have discussed, Carl, many of the underlying issues, and really, we have ourselves to blame, and I'm sure you, to some extent, if not completely, would agree that we have been complacent about the things that are going on, that there are those that have their own agenda, carrying out their own deals, so to speak, seeking profit at the expense of the masses. And many people are blind to this. They're asleep. They're unaware of what's going on. And yet that doesn't exclude them from being victims of what's going on. And I like your take on coming up with solutions and the manner in which you're doing so. And I want to explore those during tonight's show. And give you the opportunity basically to say anything you want to say. In fact, I think before we get into the specifics, let me just turn the mic over to you and allow you that opportunity.
Okay, I appreciate that. Basically what I see is that there is an ever-increasing monopolization of the economy. And when you have the increasing monopolization, you have the resulting disaster that takes place. I see that this monopolization occurs throughout education, it occurs in running for office, it occurs in just so many different areas, and the result is that you have this concentration of the media, and you have fewer and fewer people deciding what we get to see and hear, and the result there is that the public doesn't really get a chance to find out what's going on, and somehow that plus campaign financing, which causes the rich to put their own people in power and cause a host of other problems as a result. There's something that we can do, I think, to change that. And what I've been focusing on is trying to identify the media that we can use to compete with the monopolized media. That's one thing, to try to find where we can reach each other on a low-cost or no-cost basis and alert each other to what's going on. So I view the different available free media as one approach to a problem. Secondly, I'm looking at the way the public itself, the voters, locally can try to change things. And in New York State, we have a fantastic statute that says that any town or village, city, can have the voters themselves pass statutes, even if the local legislature doesn't like it. So what I've been thinking of and implementing is it's described in this way, where I tell people, look, when you vote for a candidate, after all the promises that the candidate makes, and after the candidate wins, what do you get? And the answer is nothing. You never get what the candidate promises. But if you vote for a statute and you win, you get the statute. So what are we voting for candidates for? We should be voting for statutes. We ought to be voting locally to circumscribe our elected officials rather than trying to concentrate on appointing more corrupt people. Let's try to circumscribe the areas in which they can operate, for example, by requiring New York City to post on a website every single payment that it makes to anyone. Who authorized it? How much? What did they do for it? and so on, so that everyone can take a look and see where the money's going. So that would be one way that we could have some light shed on the corruption by pointing out who's getting the money. So having ballot initiatives by the people to try to circumscribe the elected officials, to curtail what they can do. And also, I think the one of the most important things is to have public financing of campaigns. So I have a statute that I'm trying to pass in New York that would require the New York City to finance 100% of the campaign costs for anyone running for office, so that that would free us up. And I ran for Attorney General in 2006, very unsuccessfully, because you can't raise money, you can't get petitions signed, you can't do everything within the 43 days they allocate to the challengers. So you need to have a faster system. And I've developed different ways of approaching that problem because I have been living it. And I've seen, I ventured into politics in the year 2006 for the first time. I haven't been in politics at all, except in college I became the president of the student council. So that was like a big thing, to become the president of the student body. And I didn't do anything for years and years and years after that, until I saw that the country really is falling apart and nobody has any solutions. And since I'm oriented in law, I've been working in the area of antitrust and civil rights. And by the way, it's funny, but antitrust and civil rights are just the other side of the same coin. It's the same people.
Mm-hmm.
Either the monopolists or the government they own.
Yes.
So in one hand, you use antitrust law to go after the business end of it, but when the business controls government, then it becomes civil rights. But it's the same people, just different side of the same coin. So that's a quick rundown. I don't know if I've given you enough to work with, but...
Yeah, you have. In fact, it brings up a couple of points that I would like to make, and you know, you're free to comment on these. On the local level, and I have investigated local corruption in a city, in a small or moderate-sized community, and the city council members and the mayors and the law directors and the treasurers, all these people that work for the city, will sit there with a glum face as I rattle off 100 or more violations of local, county, state, and federal statutes, and yet business as usual. It goes on where there's no accountability. For instance, if there's a levy passed, there is no accountability for how the money is being spent. And it always ends up being a situation. Let's say this levy is for a 3-year period. They'll resell the levy to keep it on the books, even though nothing under the levy has been completed. Let's say if it's the levy is to raise money for the schools or for the fixing the streets. Well, they're already taking the taxes out to fix the streets. Why aren't the streets getting fixed? And when they do fix the streets, they're using inferior methods such as cold patching. They'll go out and buy $250,000 machine designed to properly lay tar or asphalt on the road. And I'm not all for that either. That puts more money in the oil company's pockets. They're catering to the oil cartel when they do that. They used to be able to build streets that would last 30 or more years without repairs. Now they can't build a road or a highway that will function for more than 3 months without developing potholes. And no one is accountable for the inferior workmanship, the cutting of corners and costs, and that money has got to be going somewhere. Now, are they placing
it? I have an idea in that. I just got the idea as you were talking.
Okay.
And that is to have an insurance carrier be responsible for the repair of the road and have them be responsible for overseeing the construction. So that lay it off on an insurance, and you would find that the private enterprise might create a better road than the government if you have some financial responsibility down the line.
Mm-hmm. They have pawned off the rubbish collection services to companies like Browning Ferris Industries. They like to use the BFI acronym, and they pawn the school busing off on Laidlaw. And if people looked into where these companies are located, you know, we have a Canadian company driving our children to school. Tell me there's not something wrong with this picture. These are the types of things that I investigated. And, of course, there is so much money to be made in these contracts. The food contracts are the same situation. The companies providing the food for the children in the schools are serving the same crap, pardon my English, but I can't think of a better word, that they're serving at the ballpark. Why is that? It's the same company. It's the same company that has the contract, a 30-year contract for concessions in most of the major sports venues around the world, not just in this country.
I know. I've seen litigation concerning that group.
Yes. So you know who I'm speaking about. In fact, it's a New York company.
Yeah.
So, and then I know who they're in business with, too. I know who their partners are. So these are the types of things that are protecting, this misrepresentation really is what we're getting. And if it's not criminal, it's bordering on criminal. And I strongly feel that these people who run for office and take an oath to uphold the Constitution and abide by state and local statutes really should have some accountability. Even the judges, for that matter, because the judges are doing the same thing in rendering these idiotic, mindless verdicts that are forcing people into criminal impoverishment. So now I've covered a lot of areas, and I know that you have an idea to at least get that on the right track.
I think that, I've been thinking this thing through for quite a few years because for over 40 years, I've been trying to enforce the nation's antitrust laws. And it's just impossible any longer. The courts don't recognize antitrust cases. The government doesn't enforce antitrust. What merger has ever been stopped? They're allowing them all. So the more mergers we have, of course, the higher the concentration of the economy, the fewer people on top who then have their own little fiefdoms and they control the politicians and they control the government. They divide up the country that way. We need to have corporations in a position where if somebody fails, that it doesn't matter. We shouldn't have the whole world collapse if one of these major corporations fails. It's too big. We've allowed them to get too big. They've escaped our regulation by becoming so large that they say bye-bye to us, and they go to other countries where they make the goods, and then they ship them back to America at highly favorable rates that impoverish us in America because we buy those goods, and we don't have enough money to even we don't have jobs in this country. We can't pay the rent. We're stealing from the country to give to these foreign international corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to do something about it. We need jobs here. And we've got to have, I have a website in which I list about 10 or 12 things that are the worst things in the country, and they really need to be corrected. And I've listed about 12, and this is one of them. That we have to start enforcing we have to make people who import goods pay the cost for America to live. We have to share the cost of our economy here. We can't let people come in from other countries and steal our jobs merely by selling these inferior made goods in this country and taking all the money out of the country. We need to make stuff ourselves here. We have to make it. We have to deal with people in America, create jobs here, create manufacturing once again. And we've got to do this by preventing everyone from coming in and ripping us off, which is what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it speaks volumes, too, of the corporate world and all these big companies that move their manufacturing out of the country. I mean, they did that to cut costs. They didn't. We didn't see any reduction in the cost of these goods. They're making more money, and the prices are going up, and
right.
Our people are out of work and can't even afford those
right.
those goods.
You know, what's happening that nobody knows about is that the major retailers in the United States are forcing the manufacturers to sell to them below cost. And it's just unbelievable that manufacturers would be selling below cost. But when you start thinking about it, would a manufacturer that makes baseballs, would they acquire a baseball company? Would they acquire another baseball manufacturing company? And the answer is sure. Well, why would they do that when they already have so many baseballs? They do it to gain market share, so that people sell to the major retailers, the manufacturers in America, sell below cost to Walmart and the other major retailers. And in doing so, they destroy their own business, because the people that I represent, the small independent stores, retailers, wholesalers, jobbers, they're being put out of business all over the place. You know that when a major retailer opens up in an area, half the stores go out of business.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for it is that the major retailer is not more efficient. They buy at one-half the price, that's all. They're given a price discount of 50% from what the wholesaler would pay that services these independent stores. The government has failed to enforce the nation's antitrust laws. The result is that millions of people have been put out of business. As simple as
yes.
that. It's just a failure to enforce our laws. But
mm-hmm.
the laws are still on the books. And I'm saying that if our government, or since our government at most levels, do not enforce the laws that protect the individuals and small businesses, then why don't we have an official of government that will? So I thought that why don't we have an attorney general in every town, village, county, city in the United States who would be enforcing the laws for the people, rather than being a prosecutor who would enforce laws against the people. How about enforcing the rights of people instead of their duties? Why don't we give the people something instead of always oppressing them with making them toe the line, when the big guys that run the country don't toe anything? Why is it the small guys are the ones who get put away? And we enforce the duties that they have, but at the top we don't enforce any duties. They run around and take our country away from us. So what I think we need is a town attorney general in every town, village, county, city in the United States, who will then become the effect of the SEC, the FTC, the FCC, the Attorney General, the Justice Department, the Bureau of Economics. All of these different state and federal agencies really don't do anything to enforce the rights of people. We ought to have an official of government elected by the people at the lowest level of government who will go out there and bring the lawsuits to enforce our rights to jobs, to health care, to no voting fraud, to housing, to all of the things that we're beginning to lose.
Yes, now that's well taken, and that's a novel idea. And if were I to play devil's advocate just for a couple of seconds,
sure.
Aren't we supposed to already have that in place in our justice system?
The problem is that, like the EEOC, everyone knows what the EEOC is. And that is that it was designed to make it look like people would get justice.
Mm-hmm.
But it never does anything. It's just designed to hold up the complaints and spin them around and hope that people get sick of complaining and then give up. So
Or run out of money.
Or run out of money. So the government agencies, I wish, didn't exist, frankly, because they deter people from doing what needs to be done because you think that the government is there watching and doing something about the problem, but we know they're not. So what we need is an official at the lowest level of government that you and I can walk into, a guy or a woman that has an office in a corner somewhere on Main Street in the town, and you walk in and say, you know, we're having a problem here. And the person will say, well, what is it? Well, we have three or four people that say that this insurance company is ripping us off, or there's somebody selling below cost to this major retailer, it's putting us out of business. And that person would be a town attorney general, somebody you could go to enforce the laws, not to create new laws, just to enforce existing laws. And as a byproduct, as I see it, the attorney general in a town, village, county, would be able to collect enough money in bringing suit against wrongdoers that you could have free health care for the residents of the town as a result.
Okay. In principle, that sounds good. And again, I'm not trying to sound like the devil's advocate. Attorneys already have a reputation of a certain kind. How can we guarantee, or what would be the method of policing the performance of the attorney general in a particular town that he is not compromised, like others in the system?
Well, I think that the best bet is through election.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe annual election might be the best way, like a sheriff. And actually, the town attorney general would really be in opposition to the county prosecutor. The county
Yes.
prosecutor puts him away and gets headlines and earns the right to become your judge, where they put more people away. And they do so at huge expense to the country and to the town. Whereas the attorney general for the town would actually deliver benefits, tangible economic benefits to the town, and you would find that more people would probably want to become the town attorney general than they would be the prosecutor. You would have competition there. Competition to become the town attorney general and to do good things for the town. I can see how the town can prosper if it has a good town attorney general. I don't think the town prospers when you have an overzealous prosecutor.
Okay. Now, do you see any conflict between, let's say, the locality passes these statutes, these laws or ordinances, as they're often called, that are going to dictate how this is to go down? Now, you go into the existing legal system. What's to ensure that the system is not going to play the games as usual? I'm saying you have an attorney general with integrity, okay?
Okay, here's what happens. Just to start off talking about the criminal area, I have the number one website in the country on prosecutorial abuse. I'm not a criminal lawyer, but I'm concerned about it. So I have the number one website. And in the criminal area, what percentage of people go to trial, roughly?
It's probably very slim, because many
3%.
Probably plea bargain.
About 3%. For major felonies, for major crimes, it's about 3%. And
mm-hmm.
those people that try the case, what percentage win when they go to trial? What percentage of defendants win when they go to trial, like Regas, like Helmsley?
Oh, it's probably 80 or 90% win.
No, none of them.
Oh,
except
no?
O.J. Simpson. None of these people win. They spend $100 million defending themselves, and they still lose. You can't win in the criminal justice system. The prosecutor has a right to bribe people to testify. They have that right stemming from the from England. They have a right to induce people to testify by letting them out of jail. So you have an industry now of people hoping that they will be roommates or cellmates with a new person being jailed. And then they run over to the prosecutor and say, I'll tell you that such and such admitted to the crime if you cut me a deal.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the guy never admitted he did the crime, but anyone would be happy to get out of jail if all they had to do was lie under oath and say that this fellow told me he killed his mother.
Yeah.
So that's what we have. We have people that are lying in order to get out of jail and putting other people in jeopardy as a result. They're causing people to lose criminal trials. So you don't have a chance, really, for many reasons in the when you're a criminal, an alleged criminal. And you have to take a plea because taking a plea for 1 or 2 years is a lot better than getting slammed for 30 years if you lose the trial, which you're probably going to do.
Yeah.
So it's an unfortunate and unholy and just something that has to be abandoned. We have to have a better way of dealing with the criminal justice system. For one thing, we should ration the criminal justice by forcing the prosecutor to put into a budget currently the full cost of incarceration for each of his convictions so that the local people have to pay today for the cost of these excessive criminal enforcement activities. That'll bring political pressure on to cut down on this.
Yeah. Now, I've also witnessed some judges, on the other hand, refusing to allow, these are issues of habeas corpus, naturally, where the judge is instructing the jury, and not really instructing the jury on the basis of the law, but merely on the basis of the outcome that has been predetermined. In the back rooms, there's a particular judge that I saw. I don't recall his name, but he was indicted. He was caught on tape working out a $125,000 deal with the defense attorney.
Should have been more. Nothing shocks me, but I don't believe that. I hope that bribery of judges isn't a commonplace thing, but you're always going to have corruption any time that there is any discretion. You can have some corruption, but I was trying to think of what it is that I have in this area that for one thing, I know what I was going to say. This is something that everyone should know and nobody really knows. And that is that when juries are given instructions and they are told that they're required by law to follow the judge's instructions, did you know that that isn't true? That there's a doctrine of nullification of jury instructions? And the jury is really, under law, allowed to reach whatever conclusion it wants to, and there is no contempt of court if they should defy the judge and rule against the judge's instructions. All the judge can do is just dismiss the jury and declare a mistrial and have another trial. But nullification of a judge's instructions is something legal, but nobody knows that they can do it, and you're not allowed to tell the jury that.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was alluding to before when I was talking about these judges that give certain instructions. I didn't go into it like you just did, but that's kind of the point I'm making. Whether or not, in other words, I'm also speaking of judges that make statements like, I'm not going to allow the law in my courtroom. You know, this is insanity. This is pure insanity and treason. And these judges aren't held accountable for this. Now,
if we have elected judges, we don't have elected judges in the federal branch. And in fact, you know that federal judges are for life, right?
Yes.
Wrong. Judge McCasey was a judge for life until he became the Attorney General. So judges are not necessarily for life. And judges at one level would like to rise to a higher level. So they're really not there for life. Do you know what magistrate judges are in federal court?
Well, I know what they are on the lower level courts. Inform us.
Okay, in a federal district court, you have Article III judges who are appointed for life. And you have what is known as a magistrate judge who is appointed So they don't have the full protection that people think they have of having no pressures at all. The magistrate is worried about becoming a judge, and if he or she delivers too many decisions that go contrary to the ruling authority, they won't be elected. I'm sorry, they won't be selected as an Article III judge, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
So these are just things that you learn along the way, and nobody really understands a lot of this stuff. And we just hope that somebody does and is going to act on it, but nobody seems to be doing anything. There's very few people out there, and there's certainly no media by which we can reach each other. I mean, you have one way that we can do it, but, you know, it should be more encompassing, because what we're doing is the most vital thing in the world here.
Carl, if I can interrupt you just for a moment, if you can make sure that you're holding your phone steady, we're
okay.
Kind of getting a muddy sound.
Okay, I'm sorry. It might be my ear that I was rubbing against it or something. Okay.
Okay, that's better. That already got clearer. Okay.
Okay.
Yes, I'm in agreement with you on that, and of course, you know, we could probably spend 20 or 30 shows talking about these issues, but this is important. The concept of a local attorney general working for the benefit of the people, and I want to get into this now. Another aspect of what you're doing. You are a man of many websites. you have more websites, I think, than Google solicits for advertising. But I don't mean that in a condescending way. You have thought out many of the different aspects of what you do and sort of compartmentalized everything or categorized it so that people are looking for a particular thing. You know, you've created a place for them to go to this wonderful repository of information that you have been assembling. And I know you sent me a list of some of the more important ones, and I want to read these off, if I can, for a moment, to the listeners, and then I want to camp out on the last one that I read, and I think you know what that's going to be about, because
yes,
we want to discuss some solutions. This is a very important solution that you brought up in this concept of a local attorney general. And it's something that will start a grassroots movement if we do it in one town and nearby, and this starts spreading, and the word gets around, and we can get the word around the world with a radio show or with newspaper articles. We can get this word out, and with the power of the Internet and the power of the local access television, like you were mentioning earlier in the show. You've got... Okay, let's see. You've got lawmall.com. That's LAWMALL.com. That would be for your legal issues, I would presume. It's pretty self-explanatory. You've got your own personal website as a lawyer, and that's Carl Pearson. .com, CARLPERSON.com. You've got a website for political change, lawmall.com/candidates.php. Again, lawmall.com/candidates.php. And that's for creating political change. I've visited these sites briefly. You have so many, my goodness. And this is a very interesting one. This is the one, really, that tonight's show is about. And I'm going to give you the opportunity to talk about this. This is myclads.com, spelled M-Y-C-L-A-D-S. .com. Now, when you enter that into a URL address space in whatever browser you're using, It should pull up www for any of these, but they all have the www in the front. MyClads, what is that about?
Okay, MyClads is something that I've developed over the years. And I, several years ago, maybe, I don't know, 20 years ago, I thought of shared employees, having certain people do the work that is needed by sharing the activity. And then over the years, I really did nothing about that, but I just had that as an idea. And then over the years, I've seen how the major retailers and major corporations are treating employees that they have as if they don't like them and want to get rid of them. They cut back their benefits. They ask them to reveal everything they're doing to somebody who's then going to fire them and do it more cheaply or outsource it and go overseas. So we've had nothing but bad treatment by many employers in the United States. And I'm wondering, really, what is the end of all this? Is the goal to have no U.S. employees? Is that really the goal? So why don't we do something that will benefit the individuals in America rather than the corporations? And as I see it happening right now, there's more and more inventory of unused time on the part of Americans than ever before, meaning they're not working. We have maybe 10 hours a day that people could be able to spend and want to spend doing something useful. So I figured out a system by which we can have a computer-based website be the employer for everyone. All we need to do is to indicate to the computer what it is that we would like to do and just describe it in the same way that you might, like mow lawns, assemble IKEA furniture, repair carburetors for 1983 Buick. There's probably 10 billion different things that could be put down there. And the website allows people to put down any number of ads that they want. If you want 10,000 ads, 20,000 ads, I don't care. The ads are all free. The ads last forever. And you can find your market by trying to figure out what people want and whether you would like to fulfill that need. And then place ads all for free. They last forever. And the ads have a system where once you have a basic record in there about yourself, including your picture, and a place where you can refer to your website, you can add each additional ad very quickly of 2 or 3, 4 words and put in hundreds or even thousands of ads. The purpose of all this is, and then more importantly, there's a 50-mile zip code radius search feature so that if somebody wants to find a person that mows lawns within 22.3 miles of the person that seeks this service, they put in that number and they search for mow lawns, and they will come up with everyone within that radius who is interested in mowing lawns. But mowing lawns is not what it's all about. It's about everything. Anything that you can do, whether, for example, you know how to use New York State or any other state's software system for financial reporting of candidates, that's a big market. A lot of candidates. There's a lot of people who need help there. If you know how to place bulbs in a dashboard of a car, this user was charging $140 to open up the dash panel, the dashboard of the car, and replace a few bulbs, $140. If anyone learns how to do that, you could probably do the service for $50 and make a lot of money. So there's really billions of things that you could put down, and the more specific you are, the more apt you are to be retained. If you could list the different carburetors that you know how to repair, if you can list the different IKEA furnitures that you can put together, if you can figure out the things that people need and put it down,
they're going to find you. So that's the beginning of having people work for themselves at much higher rates than they can get at Walmart.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Carl, I want to point out the sound, again, is a bit muddy. You might try readjusting your phone. Question, how many people now are actually using this? Has anyone
Very
begun?
Few. It's in a beta stage right now, and I'm just working with the programmers to try to clean it up. I had a problem along the way. Would you like to hear the problem?
Sure.
The problem was that when I ran for office, Attorney General in New York, I figured out that I could put together a list of 1 million people by using Google's AdWords,
mm-hmm.
where they say if you're the lowest advertiser on the list, but you're still, they pick up your ad, you only have to pay a penny a click. So I figured 1 million names at a penny is $10,000, and I can have the same subscription list that the New York Times has. They have about 1 million names,
mm-hmm.
and they're worth $2.something billion, according to today's newspaper. And I had an opportunity through Google to be able to put together 1 million names of people who might be interested in my candidacy at a cost of 1 cent per click, or $10,000. I started doing that in order to acquire that list of 1 million names, and a week later, Google advises me, notifies me by computer, not a human being, that I now have to pay 50 cents a click. So they upped the price to $500,000 overnight. But eBay continues to pay half a cent a click for the same keywords. So I brought suit against Google for monopolization. I'm the only one in the world that's suing Google for monopolization. Why is that? Why isn't anyone else suing Google for monopolization? Why is the duty upon me to do it? Why isn't Microsoft in there? Why isn't Yahoo in there? Why isn't the government in there? How can the government be in there when Google has already held two presidential debates? They're that influential.
Well, to answer your question, the way I see it, there's a conspiracy of data mining going on. I mean, they're collecting all kinds of information on people, and it's not about giving us jobs, that's for sure. It's not about giving us better health care, that's another issue. What is their reason? I mean, that's a pretty valid question. And I, of course, you and I both know the answer, and so do my listeners.
Yeah. So I'm up in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. I'm a member of that court, by the way, surprisingly, but I've been a member of the Ninth Circuit Federal Court of Appeals for a long time. Not a judge, but just a lawyer that practices there once in a while. And I'm also in the Second Circuit and a few other circuits. But this is a very serious case that Google is monopolizing information. You can't have a worse monopoly in the whole world than monopolizing information.
Mm-hmm.
And they have 80% of the income from search advertising.
Mm-hmm. There was a time last year when I was the National Theatrical Screening Coordinator for Aaron Russo's film, America, Freedom to Fascism. And, of course, there was a lot of information about the Federal Reserve and the IRS coming out in that movie. And basically, all the hits, when it went to a video presentation, there was a trailer on Google. And one day it had reached 200,000 hits on the Google website, and they reset it to zero.
No.
Oh, yes. They did this several times.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Unbelievable.
These are the types of things that they do, and it's not just with that particular film. It's been done with many of them. They've done this to anyone that speaks the truth, and it's consistent. They don't want the truth told. They do what they can to degrade the response that the public is generating.
Well, the people in power write the history books, and that's what's happening here.
Yes. But that's a one type of phenomenon. Now, since Google basically took over YouTube, I don't know all the specifics other than, you know, all of a sudden now YouTube and Google are one and the same animal.
It's owned by Google, 100% ownership, and they have a contingent liability to the owners of possibly another $1 billion or $2 billion, according to the contract. But I'm suing Google for monopolization, and here is the interesting theory behind it. Do you know what a person who has a lawful monopoly is allowed to do?
Well, I don't know specifically.
So they're allowed to charge monopolistic prices.
Oh, well, yeah, that's a given.
That's what it's all about.
And
that's all it's about. A monopoly is where you can charge monopolistic prices.
Yes.
Okay. Now, if you have a legal monopoly, such as a patent, or if you developed, let's say, the computer chip and you were the only one and you developed it yourself, then you would have a right to charge whatever the market would bear. And you could discriminate in price. You could charge some people more, some people less, but you pretty much could do anything you wanted to. But if you acquire your monopoly by acquisition of different companies, then your monopoly is not in-house made. It's one that was put together by merger and acquisition. And it becomes a monopoly through by acquisition and agreement. It becomes a conspiracy to monopolize, or it becomes an illegal monopoly. So Google acquired more than 65 companies by the time I sued them. DoubleClick was the last acquisition they made at the time that I amended my complaint. So they had 65 acquisitions of technology. They did not acquire their monopoly by in-house work. They acquired it through acquisition. And in doing that, they then forfeit the right to exploit their monopoly. That's the thrust of my case. I'm demanding that they give everyone the lowest price available, and that they, for anyone who owns a website to be able to monetize the traffic of the website, that they have to let their system be available to all of us at the lowest price. That, like, eBay only pays a half cent a click, and I had to pay 50 cents a click for the same words?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're talking in terms of patents, it's a licensing issue. Now, if someone comes to me and I have a patent on a widget, and they say, well, we want to make 100 of these widgets that you've designed, and we want to sell them to our customers.
They have to license you at the same rate as they license others.
Yes, but we know that that's not how it's done. Now, if someone comes and offers to make 1 million of these widgets, that's where these discrepancies lie.
There's a doctrine that a person that sells the right to exploit a patent and sells the whole thing to one person can charge anything he wants to that one person. But if instead of selling your patent, you merely license it, you have to license all on pretty much equal terms.
Yes, you're speaking about exclusivity then.
Right.
Correct? Yes.
No, the non-exclusive license.
Oh, okay.
To so that you can have 5 or 10 people making computer chips, for example. The licensor is supposed to license them on equal terms so that they can compete with each other.
Yes, that's what I'm speaking about.
Yep.
Okay. Exclusivity would be that one manufacturer.
One manufacturer and they lose all interest in the patent, then they just sold their patent. They've assigned it. They got their money, and they can charge anything they want for that one assignment. Or if they assign the right exclusively to one person, they can charge anything they want.
Mm-hmm. Now, for a moment, if we could again, I guess we're getting into the economics of this infrastructure that's called the internet. As I recall, when Al Gore invented the Internet, we were told it was going to be free. In essence, we paid for it through tax dollars. And it's anything but free. The only thing you get free is spam and phishing emails and invasion of privacy, the theft of your personal data, the damage that comes with the viruses that invade your computer. And how come no one is accountable for this? Have we forgotten that promise? Or was that a fiction in the beginning? Was that a lie?
Well, the government has these contractors. The backbone is the backbone are the trillion-dollar investments of these telephone companies that provide the wires or the uplinks or whatever that makes the whole system work, and they need to get paid, they say, and they're looking to actually charge extra. There's a movement on now to try to charge more for email, so that they claim it will reduce email by having people be penalized for using it. So they charge for email and exclude people that don't pay the fee and slow down the email and so on. There's all sorts of gimmicks that once you have monopolies and you have willing legislators, they'll do almost anything that the monopolist wants. And we've just got to try to learn how to change this. And I think that the way of changing it, at least what I'm trying to do, is I'm trying to find one town in the United States that wants change. And I'm willing to go in there, and I want to put MyClad into everyone's home. I want them all to adopt MyClad to use it. And I want to put in a town attorney general. And I want to start looking at ways that the town can be made more prosperous. That is, the individuals and the homeowners and the small businesses. I want to help restore the economy in one town. And if it works out, you're going to have a lot of jealous towns in the periphery.
Mm-hmm.
And they are going to demand the same thing. And that's going to be a grassroots approach towards retaking the country, I hope.
Yeah. Well, then you're also going to be debunking this myth that the working class has to be retrained to do a certain kind of work. There are people who are craftsmen, furniture manufacturers or furniture makers, people, cabinet masters, plumbers, people that have gifts that they've really contributed to society their whole lives, their working lives, and they're forced into this situation where someone tells them, well, you know, you're going to have to get a computer and you're going to have to get some computer skills. Maybe they just prefer not to even deal with computers on that level.
You know what? This is why the breakdown of what one can do for another is very useful. You can find people to help you in the areas where you need help. Now, I just read an article, which possibly you just read, about North Carolina, Hickory, North Carolina. Are you referring to that article?
Well, that I'm speaking in generalities, actually, but
okay, well,
go
Hickory,
ahead.
Hickory, North Carolina was where almost where was most of the furniture made in America. It was in Hickory, North Carolina. They just had a big monopoly almost on manufacturing. Now it's all gone. But the people are there that have these skills. There's no reason why we can't make more furniture and sell it using internet, using email, using MyClad, and we can put people back to work again. We just have to find a way to sell the time that they have on their hands. That's what we have. We have an inability of individuals to find a market for what they want to do. And if we have a website where you can put on for free forever and define yourself economically, I think it'll work out that people will find you and pay you, and pay you a lot more than you can earn otherwise for most people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I see as a way of breaking through here and not being dependent upon corporations that don't want us.
Yes. You know, if I use my own personal experience, you know, I notice lately that you, when you hire a plumber, you're paying for the bonding of his employees, you're paying for his gasoline, you're paying for his truck or whatever vehicle he's using. You're paying for things that really you're not benefiting from. It's sort of a blanket service charge, it's called. They charge you anywhere from $50 to $125 just to show up at your house, as if that somehow is going to lock you into doing business with them. And I have negotiated myself, and I'm a tough negotiator in that way. I'll tell one of these people, you know what, if you come here and tell me that you are unable, or you show me that you're unable to fix my problem, I'm not paying you a dime. In fact, I'm not paying you for the privilege of finding out that you're incompetent. Okay? Now, I got an unwanted call. I'm on the no-call list, and I got a sales call today. And I asked the gentleman very politely not to call me anymore. It wasn't a sales call, he said, after I inquired of him. And so I said, well, you know, my time is pretty valuable. In fact, you interrupted me from some very important work. I charge $1,500 per hour for this call, starting with the first second of receiving it. You send me an email or make a call again, and you are accepting that rate, and I will bill you for that. I will report you to the credit agencies. I will do all of this. I was paid three times. This was several years ago. Three companies paid me after I threatened to turn them over to collection agencies. Okay? So we can use those tools that they use on us and get results. Now, do I like talking to someone like that? No. But I also don't like getting calls at 9 o'clock on a Sunday night from these people. When I'm on the no-call list, which is supposed to protect me from those types of intrusions into my privacy and my pursuit of happiness, okay, and then the fact that these people make up the most outlandish stories as to why they're calling me. It's not a sales call. It's not a service call. It's not a follow-up on previous business. I don't know who these people are. What the heck are they calling me for? Okay? And they can't answer that question, and we all need to be doing things like that. I think that's a great idea. I'd like to make that a business that I'd register with you on my class, that I will compensate people for the intrusions into their privacy.
All of these things, whatever we can offer, we ought to have a place where we can find people to do anything that we want. And I created this as this website, myclads.com, so that people will put their tasks on there rather than trying to find a job. I want tasks. You can put down if you want a job. I have the website actually will take anything. You want social stuff, you want to sell postcards, anything you want to do, but I really designed it for the tasks. And for every task that you put there, I give you an option to put a website where people can get more information. They can see your picture there. Or on my website, you can have your picture, and you can have a link to your website so that you direct people to a website showing how you mow lawns, what equipment you have, what your price list is, and so on and so forth. So it becomes like a way of getting business for people who don't have an employer telling them to guard the door from 8 to 5, and that's your job. We don't need that. We can do that. We can figure out a way to occupy our time more profitably, but we have to have an orderly way of doing it. So I think that doing it by task and letting people define themselves economically as what they want to do, and you can reach the entire world, but at least I'm starting out by trying to reach the English-speaking countries.
Yes, now
to start out in a small town and try it there and hope that it expands.
Mm-hmm. Have you considered a follow-up, let's say, on a referral basis, or in other words, you know, you have a review of the work that someone has done. You have
I haven't gone to the extreme, and it's not necessarily an extreme, but eBay is the model for that, and I haven't had the luxury of putting in all the refinements yet.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer is no, I really haven't built that in yet. I need to get the basic website going without putting in too many refinements. I've really got to get the listings. I've got to get people in there with the listings and then try to market the website through publicity and through AdWords or MSN and other search advertising as a way of jump-starting it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
traffic to the website. Yeah. And it requires publicity.
Yes, I was going to say, I'll put your links on my website. I don't know if I can do all of those links. Probably could, I guess, but I'll put the major ones for people
to
contact.
Lawmall and MyCloud are the two most significant things.
Mm-hmm.
MyCloud is really, I hope, going to be the employer of the future. So
mm-hmm.
Imagine an employer that you can put anything you want to do in life on it, anything, and you can look at what others do and try to guide yourself. If you see you're in an area where there's a need for something, put it down. Put it in a variety of ways. Hope that search will find you and that you can make some money.
Yeah.
And that's really what it's about. It's finding a way that people can become gainfully employed at a time when we're losing jobs, we're losing income, the country's going to hell, and the people are suffering. And they don't have to suffer. We have a lot of demand for time that people could put in, but we don't know how to find the people that can do the job.
Yes. Now, BBS Radio has committed to helping us out with this, too. So we will. I've already talked to Don Newsom about this in anticipation of this show tonight and the next one that you're going to do. We'll come up with a way that we can post something to direct people to your database and let them know.
Terrific. I appreciate that.
That will drastically improve the odds of people finding you and being aware when they're just coming to our site to read the news or to listen to a show like this.
Absolutely. I'm going to build something also that will allow people to find people like you. So when they reach me, I want them to be able to find you. So I'm trying to think of what I can put in and where I should put it. It's probably on that same page that's my most important page, the one that you selected. You know, in that page, I have a link to a website where I list the top 12 or 13 things that need to be collected in the country. Did you come across that?
Yes, I did. Yes.
I've tried to really think through where the problems are, and I came up, I call it my top 10 list of the needed changes in the United States. And it's just, you know, my thinking of what we could do. One of them is 100% financing of all parts of campaign for candidates for state and local office. I don't even bother with federal because I've pretty much given up on federal. I think we've got to work on state and local. I think it'll filter up to the
mm-hmm.
federal level, but right now I'd like to see 100% financing when you run for a state or local office.
Mm-hmm. And the clincher to this MyCloud site, again, to repeat for the listeners or anyone that joined us late, this is a database which is basically a way for anyone to market a particular skill or talent they have that they can fulfill a need of another person in any area of their lives. We're talking about gainful employment here. And it's free. Is that right?
And they can put up to 1,000 or 10,000 ads. I don't care. It's all for free. As many ads as they can put in that define what they would like to do. Because who knows where the market really is. Maybe trying to assemble IKEA furniture isn't here, but maybe repairing carburetors is. But no matter what it is, don't put in just one thing. Put in a variety of things. Try to find a market for yourself so that you can fulfill a function that's needed.
But we want to stress, too, that the individual that's filling out that application is honest and accurate. I mean, if your dream is to be a rock star and you haven't even learned to play an instrument, don't put yourself down as a musician, you know.
Right. I mean, there has to be. I mean, I can only be it's like somebody running an ad in a newspaper. You really don't know. But
mm-hmm.
but the person hiring is going to talk with them and say, you know programming, you do PHP programming, and they can ask a few questions and figure out whether the person does know programming or not.
Yeah.
So it's up to the people involved, but this is where I don't charge anything, and I'm allowing the ads to go on forever, which is different because Craigslist takes your ads down at the end of, 10 or 14 days. You have to republish those ads or repost them. And
mm-hmm.
and that means you can't have hundreds of ads because you spend your whole week posting ads. So if you define yourself with 1,000 different ads on my website, I'm not going to knock those ads out. I'm going to let you keep them there forever and hope that you find a market. If you don't like something a year from now and you get a couple of calls, then knock the ad out yourself because you're no longer interested in mowing lawns. You're now interested in driving a car for political bigwigs or something. I mean, your interests and desires will change, but I'm allowing people to find a market by letting the ad sit there, and I will be driving customers into the website through advertising. And if that happens, you're going to have a happy community. The first community that I used as a test for this is hopefully going to prosper because I'm going to have as many people in that one town be registered on the website as I can possibly happen, as I can make happen. Then I'm going to market it. I'm going to go 50 miles out and say, you know, that if you want anything done, this website is people that are locally based. You can find them within 50 miles of you. And if that happens, the people that aren't advertisers are going to say, hey, I want some of that too. And it's going to expand, and I hope it will expand quickly. And we may have a national database in no time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Carl, we're about out of time. This has been very enlightening. I learned a lot from just listening to you speak, and you got my juices flowing, and hopefully those in the listening audience. I do want to mention a book you have written. Now, is this available for sale on your website? I need to ask you that.
Actually, the answer is I will send it by email to anyone who wants it.
Okay, you hear that, folks? A free PDF version in your email of a book called Saving Main Street and Its Retailers. And it's I'll give you the overview. It's The Facts You Must Know and 3 Plans to Protect Your Town and Its Employment and Business Opportunities, Property Values, Tax Base, and Standard of Living by Carl E. Pearson. And did I say your name correctly?
Pearson, yes. Yeah.
Yes, okay. So that's available. Now, they can get that on which website? What will they find that?
Well, they have to email to me, I think.
Okay.
I'm not sure which website. I had it listed in my... When I ran for office, I think I put it there, but I took that website down. So if they email it, if they look up my email address in any of these websites and just send me an email saying you want a copy of MX. That's my code for that book, MX.
Okay.
The M is Main Street. It's M for Main Street. I had another book with X, a book on self-employment.
Oh, okay. Well, it's been interesting. I hope you got to say at least what you hope to say tonight.
I did, absolutely.
Yeah, we were all over the table, all over the board, so to speak. But your information is very inspirational and eye-opening. You know, this is not about casting fear out there. You know, we did talk about how things are. We have to face that realistically, and I'm sure you agree with that. But then we did discuss ways to work around this, to create some new possibilities and expand our consciousness and our productivity. I mean, having an outlet for what you do for a living is certainly going to cause one to become more abundant and prosper. And it does require a lot of thought, and it looks like you have spent many years thinking about these problems. And I want to thank you for that and for coming on Evident Footprints. We have you booked for another show the 15th of this month, Tuesday the 15th. I'm looking forward to that, and I want to thank you again for staying up so late. And you're on the East Coast, so it's the bewitching hour, right?
Well, I'm going to probably look at a couple of hours worth of movies. I've had a rough day today, so I'm going to look at a couple of hours worth of movies, and I have to record the work that I did today in a computer, yet so I'll be up for a couple of hours more. And then tomorrow's another day, the day before the holiday.
Well, I want to wish you a good night, and I want to say good night to the listening audience. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. Our special guest, Carl Pearson, will be with us again on the 15th. Check out his website, especially myclads.com. You're going to want to check that out, or alarmall.com. And I'm your host, Don Nikoloff. I will be here tomorrow night. Our special guest tomorrow will be none other than Mr. Michael Anthony. And in the meantime, thanks to Don Newsom and Seth Hendrick on the sound. And I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.
Details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.
Hi, everybody out there.